Well, the remodeling part. I couldn't stand living with my dad and his wife anymore. So I found this little house online and have been slowly, I mean slowly, fixing it up. I dragged out the word for emphasis. He laughed, inching closer to me.
I noticed.
Don't you think I'm doing a good job? I asked. Didn't you see the shower tiles? I bet he cringed at the number of unfinished projects scattered around the house. He was close to me, so close that I could smell the fruit on his breath. I didn't know if it was me or if it was Kale, but one of us was inching closer to the other. By the time Kale and I had asked each other random questions like how long we could hold our breath and what noise he could listen to all day, every day, without being annoyed, we were inches away from each other. It was a magnetic pull, an irresistible attraction.
I could listen to you talk all day, he said, surprising me. It's become one of my favorite things to do.
His eyes were on my mouth. My heart was beating out of my chest. I wish I could hear you talk all day, I confessed to him. We felt so close there, huddled together on my porch, not noticing the cars or any of the people passing us.
One day you'll regret saying that.
Kale's breath covered my cheeks, my wet, needy lips. His lips were so close to mine. Was he going to kiss me, here, now, out of the blue, with the dew of orange on his lips? My mouth begged for his to inch closer, to touch mine. I had never wanted something more than I wanted him to kiss me, there on my porch. Was he going to kiss me? His lips soon answered my question. He leaned over and put his soft mouth on mine. Everything went quiet then. The traffic, the sound of the birds, even the noisy station inside my head. I had no words, no thoughts, just him. He was timid at first, gentle, until I pushed my tongue between his lips and tasted him. From that taste, my addiction flared up and I knew I would never get enough of him. I would need every hit and I would take every chance to get it. That first kiss turned into countless more as we towed the line between casual and committed. I knew the danger. If my own history had taught me nothing, at least I could heed the lesson of nearly every issue of Cosmopolitan and every romantic comedy from the past two decades. This was never, ever going to work. But I had to risk it. No matter what the cost, I had to risk it. Chapter 55. Kale was parked in the back of the spa when I got off work the next day, his huge Bronco dripping water from its massive body. He was wearing a long-sleeved shirt with his company's name printed on the front and blue jeans with frayed bottoms, as if he had worn them for years. I wanted to touch the soft, worn denim and feel the thread of the fabric against my fingertips. What are you doing here? How did you know when I would be finished? I was surprised to see him at my work, waiting with a freshly washed car and new shoes on his feet. Thrilled, but surprised.
A little birdie told me,
he said, pulling his sunglasses off his eyes, opening the passenger door for me. Does that little birdie happen to have an adorable French accent? I asked. He shrugged.
That's confidential, he said with a straight face.
I could see a little gleam in his eye. How was it possible that I missed him overnight when he had stayed on my porch with me until almost midnight, and here he was again? What are you doing here? I asked again. I wasn't going to just climb in the car without making him work for it.
I came to hopefully get you to go on a date with me.
A date? I thought we said we weren't going on dates, that we were just hanging out, seeing where this goes. He shoved his hands into his pockets and stood there, next to the open door.
We don't have to call it a date then, but would you like to hang out with me tonight, since you're off work until tomorrow at noon?
I said yes without even pretending to have to think about it. There was no point. We both knew I would go anywhere he asked me to. He held me by my elbow as I climbed inside and he shut the door behind me. The fact that he opened doors for me was so polite. He was a gentleman without even trying. I couldn't wait to meet the woman responsible for raising him and his science prodigy of a sister.
I have something planned for you. I put together some music.
He paused sheepishly.
And I want to take you to my favorite food spot in this whole city.
I was getting more excited by the minute.
I found like five bands I think you've never heard of. One is called Chevelle. I once knew this guy in basic training who would scream their lyrics over and over. They were from his hometown, and by the time we graduated, I knew almost all of their songs by heart. I don't know if you'll like them now, but if you had listened to them before you fell for Shawn Mendes, it might have been a different story.
I loved the way Kale's tongue wrapped words up to sound so much more impressive, more pleasurable to listen to when he spoke them. He was lighthearted and heavy, both home and away, biting whiskey and smooth wine. I loved the way he contradicted everything about himself. He was a fascinating man, and I couldn't wait to learn more about him. Leave Sean out of this, I told him with a smile.
I saw that poster in your room at your dad's. I didn't think about it then, but I remember it now.
Kale turned onto the highway as daylight was disappearing from the sky. He's the John Mayer of our generation, I argued. Kale snorted.
John Mayer is the John Mayer of our generation.
A few minutes later, he was quiet, and I was happy, as we listened to music and drove down a long, curvy road I had never been on before. I would always remember the way the sun and moon danced in the sky that night, and what a sense of calm his silence had started to bring over my body. I listened to his voice when he asked me random questions, like he had on our first date on my porch. It would forever remain the best first non-date of my life. How many siblings do you wish you had? Which is your favorite character on Friends? How many times have you watched The Lion King? I was starting to get too comfortable with him, there in the front seat of his Bronco. And yet I could almost feel the chaos brewing somewhere nearby. Everything was going too well. I was starting to feel too much for this guy. My brother's name popped up on my cell phone screen and I thought about ignoring it, but decided against it. Music boomed through his side of the line and his slurred words were tumbling through, becoming inaudible.
Carrie! Come get me, please! Katie! Fuck Katie! Fuck Katie and her ex-boyfriend and her fucking phone!
Austin slurred his words.
Care, please come get me!
Chaos, no longer brewing. I couldn't say no. I asked Kale to drive me to the address that Austin gave me, and we went straight there. By the time we arrived, two guys were rolling around in the middle of the street. A red t-shirt and a black t-shirt were all I could make out of the bodies.
Get off him!
I recognized Katie's voice before I saw her.
Come on, Nielsen, fuck him up!
Someone said in the background. A couple more lines of toxic encouragement were thrown out before I realized it was Austin in the red shirt. He looked like he had the guy in a headlock, and he didn't seem to plan on letting up anytime soon.
Stop it!
Katie yelled again. I ran over to where she was standing, her face streaked with mascara tears. What happened? I asked, grabbing her by the shoulders. Kale was yelling Austin's name, trying to break up the fight.
My ex and Austin!
She started crying hysterically, and couldn't tell me any more than I could see in front of me. Sirens whirled through the air as Austin let up on the chokehold so he could punch the guy in the black shirt in his ribs. They looked like little boys wrestling in their WWE-themed bedrooms, but they were adults, and the police were pulling up. I yelled Austin's name, and Kale tried to pull at Austin's shirt to get him off of the guy. If he got arrested again, he would be fucked. The siren cut off, and the voices got louder. There were only maybe 5 people outside, but when all of the voices were yelling at once, it was complete chaos. Everything happened so fast. The MPs rushed out of their car, heading straight for Kale. I screamed, running to him when Austin's body hit the ground, knocking me into the man he was fighting, whose elbow or fist was flying toward my face. I lifted my hands up to block my face and heard Kale scream. Not just a scream, but a guttural groan of pain. It was animal-like in its intensity, and it shot straight through me. I turned to him, no longer thinking about shielding myself. The only thing on my mind when I saw the MP draw his black baton in the air was that Kale was on the ground, his right leg in the line of direction for the officer's assault. Another scream rang through the air. Maybe it was Katie, maybe it was me, I'd never know. What I did know was that while Austin crept through chaos and found the Bronco, he managed to somehow lift his drunk ass up inside and lie down. Kale and I were questioned by the MPs.
Where were you two headed? Are you sure you weren't drinking at the party? Let me see some ID, soldier.
I glared at the cops long after Kale stopped shivering on the parking block. The other guy involved in the fight walked away too, yet it was Kale's identification they had asked to scan. When I told Kale it wasn't fair that he was being treated this way when he wasn't even fighting anyone, he told me not to question authority, that it wasn't safe. Give a man power and he'll ruin the world, my mother always told me. She was proving to be more right every day. An hour later, we finally made it back to the car. Austin woke up. We were almost to my dad's house. My brother was out of it all right, asking for Katie, for our mom, for a peanut butter sandwich.
I think he's more than drunk,
Kale told me after he helped Austin into my dad's house and up the stairs. Kale practically tucked Austin into his bed, yet my dad had the nerve to text me and ask if Kale was drinking and driving a few minutes after we pulled away. I wondered why my dad was up so late on a weekday, but I didn't respond. There was only so much I could take. What does that mean? I looked at Kale with harsh eyes. It wasn't the time to throw out unreasonable accusations, like my brother was on drugs. He could barely afford to get his hair cut, let alone buy drugs and keep up with his love of alcohol and Chipotle.
Nothing, I'm just thinking out loud, Kale told me.
Well, don't. I was defensive, and Austin was my twin. He wasn't on drugs, he just drank way more than he ever should have. I think it's best if neither of us talk, I said, just to try to get a rise out of him, which was completely unfair, especially given the altercation with the police. I still couldn't believe the way they behaved toward Kale. It was like they had something against him personally. The MP nearly took a nightstick to his already injured leg. The sight of it had been horrifying, and the memory of it was 100 times worse. I'm sorry, I really am, I told Kale, reaching for his hand to calm me. His fingers, warm and familiar, threaded through mine and I felt grounded again. I'm sorry for all of this. You standing up for Austin and getting attacked by those fucking MPs, having to nurse my brother. Ugh, I'm sorry for all the complicating of your life I've been doing lately. Kale sighed in the quiet car and pulled my fingers up to his lips.
You are worth every single complication you bring along.
He leaned in to kiss me.
I hope you'll always feel that way about me,
he said to me, cradling my face between his large hands. Always, huh?
Well, maybe not always. Wouldn't want to scare you off, he said.
Almost always? Kale nodded, smiled, and pulled me close to him. Even inside of the eye of a storm, he could make me feel like I was safely planted. It was all about perception, and mine could have used a dose or two of reality. But instead of searching for the ground, I was floating in the sky with the brightest star of all. My mom's voice echoed in my head as I kissed Kale again. The brightest stars burn the fastest, so we must love them while we can. She only told me that once, but all these years later, I still remembered it. I guess now that she was gone, I couldn't afford to forget all her wisdoms and wives' tales she collected over the years. Let's go home? I asked Kale, knowing he would know I meant my house. He nodded, and we drove home in the most peaceful silence, and my mother's words faded from my mind as we merged onto the highway. Chapter 56. I don't know what I'd do without my job. It wasn't only about paying bills, although God knows there was that. It was about turning the key in the front door, switching on the lights, making sure we had fresh towels and were stocked with oils. Each little task took me out of myself and helped me connect to the world around me. I was sure of my skills as a massage therapist, proud of what I could do to help people disentangle the knots of their own lives. I needed that more than ever today, as I tried to disentangle the mess of my own life. Molly understood why I was late. She had urged me to take the day off when I called to tell her what had happened, but I couldn't bring myself to do that. Kale had appointments on post all day, and I needed the distraction. I thought about going with him, but I was afraid to be mistaken for his young wife, even more afraid that I would like it. I did hate being away from him, and even called him while I walked to work. I was grateful for the work, but I had put in an almost full day and was ready to be going home, especially since Kale said he'd come over after my shift. I was scheduled to work until 4, but I would slip out an hour early if I didn't have a walk-in by 3. I was tired, worn out from our date night from hell the night before. The way Kale had tried to come to Austin's aid with the MPs, the way he kissed my forehead when I cried in his arms on the way home. Austin didn't remember any of it. Of course he didn't. He was beyond recollection. I knew it wasn't just alcohol, although that was bad enough. Our mom should have been a warning to us both. But it was more than booze. That much was made obvious by his big black pupils. He was disoriented and sloppy, like someone who had been left blindfolded in a forest and was trying to make his way out. When he called my name, he couldn't even form the first few letters. All I heard was a strangled K. Was Kale right? Was it more than alcohol controlling his body, clouding his mind? I wanted nothing more than to clear my own head of the events of last night, and I sure as hell didn't want to experience something so frightening ever again.
Everyone was saying that I wasn't as shaken as I should have been. I'm not sure what they meant by that. Was it supposed to be a compliment? Ailidi made tea and sat up with Kale and me while I talked and cried, trying to make sense of everything, trying to punch my way out of the darkness. When I could talk no more, he lifted me under my knees and back and carried me to my bed. To be held like that, to be picked up like that, it was the closest I'd come to being rescued. I was exhausted. My body melted to the mattress until noon. Kale wasn't fazed by the incident, other than being angry. I supposed it would take a hell of a lot more than a dickhead MP who had probably been bullied in high school and was now taking it out on every person of color he came across. I watched the news. It was an epidemic across the country. Kale didn't want to pull the race card, as he called it, but I wanted to. I wanted to pull the whole damn deck. The least I could do was try to use my privilege for something meaningful. But you don't realize how powerless you are until you try to do something meaningful. I saw it. Every dirty moment of bias and racism. I loved my brother, and no way would I want him to get hurt, but man, no matter how fucked up he was, Austin was treated like an upstanding citizen. The way the cop protected Austin's head as he helped him get into the squad car for the 2 minutes he actually had to stay in it. Even Austin was taunting the cop, or trying to anyway. He could only spew out little bits of words from his slanted mouth. It would have been funny if it wasn't so tragic. It was awful to watch him look so much like our mother. I still didn't fully grasp what happened. It all went down so fast. I was yelling for Austin, then Kale, then black sticks were pulled from belts. I was shielding Kale's leg. I shivered. Okay, maybe it still bothered me a little. I just felt like it didn't make sense how fast they came, how quickly they went from nearly attacking Kale to telling me to get my brother back into the Bronco they had pulled him out of. Even when they questioned us, they were harsh and biting, but retreated so quickly. Little bits and pieces of the incident. I was halfway done with the day when Kale texted me. He was leaving post and would come over after he had stopped by his duplex to drop off some paint. I told him to use the key under my hello welcome mat. It was worn down and the letters weren't so clear as they once were, but it was fine for key hiding purposes. I'll keep the bed warm, he texted me. I sighed, pressing the phone against my chest. I felt that sense of relief you feel when you slip into a warm bath or a warm bed. Bed. When I thought about Kale waiting for me in my bed. He had a way of making everything seem manageable. I sent him a kiss emoji and he sent me one back. I missed him so much that I could physically feel the emptiness of his missed presence. At 3 p.m. there were no walk-ins, not a single one. It was Tuesday. I needed to squeeze in every minute of my time with Kale before going to my dad's house for dinner. I thought about bringing Kale, but I didn't want anything to poke at our happy little bubble, especially not my dad. I couldn't imagine Austin telling him about the incident, so it was very possible he didn't know. I was counting on that. I wanted to skate through dinner without any complications or drama. I didn't want to go. I wanted to stay in my bed with Kale. I was completely addicted to him, and it terrified and thrilled me at once. Chapter 57. There were so many things I wanted to do, and they all involved Kale. There was only one thing I had to do. Dinner at my dad's. I could still taste myself on Kale's lips when I kissed him again. I was wrapped around his body, stuck to his side. He was so warm. His skin and body were so beautiful, like he was sculpted directly from the soil that nourishes and feeds the earth itself. I licked his skin just to taste him. I didn't even worry about anything at all, except him and the way he groaned when I sucked at his skin. I never really thought about this kind of dating before I knew him. Brian and I started dating without ever saying we were dating too. I didn't know we were a couple until he told me that I shouldn't wear such short shorts in front of his friends. He didn't protect me in any other ways, only when he wanted to act macho in front of his friends. Toxic masculinity at its finest. I didn't even know dating or whatever it was we were doing could be like this. Brian and I made out a lot in the beginning. I'm not sure what happened, but our physical attraction turned into something else. That something else was comfortable. And destructive, too. It wasn't good for either of us. Well, it wasn't good for me. I only wish I'd had the sense to know that at the time. Anyway, we started out hungry and hot, but we grew tired of our anxious and inexpert fumbling. Then our time together seemed to be spent going to the movies and the mall. After that, we broke up a few times and hooked up again. Because we were lonely, or bored, or whatever excuse I told myself as I drove to his place those last few times. I didn't feel the way I do now, with Kale. I didn't try to count the number of times he breathed in a minute. I didn't try to hear his heart beating inside his chest. I kissed Kale again, and his hands moved from my back down my body, and his hands squeezed my ass.
God, he groaned into my neck, kissing me. It was like you were sculpted just for me.
He moved his hands to the front of my panties. He rubbed gently, brushing over me. I tried to stay quiet, it just felt so good. I didn't want him to stop, and I also didn't want to make a big deal of it. So as my hips moved and lifted gently, and my breath caught in my throat, I swallowed his name as my eyes closed. My body tensed and released, and I clung to his body as I came. I kept my eyes closed as I came down from my blissful state, only to enter another one. I hoped with everything in me he wouldn't be like Brian and ask how it was. It instantly made everything about him. I didn't think Kale was like that, and he proved me right as I laid my head on his chest and the silence sat comfortably between us.
I want to show you these new windows that came in for my place,
Kale told me out of the blue, while he drew circles over my bare hip. Is that what you think about after you make girls come?
Just you. My two favorite things. My renovation projects and you.
He looked shy when he said it, and that made me giggle. I'm just ready for you to finish that duplex so you can work on my house, I joked. I did love the idea of Kale tearing out the cabinets in my kitchen, without a shirt. Wasn't that every girl's fantasy? A devoted guy hard at work for her? I buried my head into his chest like he could hear my thoughts.
I can't wait to work on your house, so I can sleep here every night, in this bed.
He squeezed me tighter.
I love when you're off work. You need more days off. Imagine if we had an entire day to ourselves,
he said into my hair. I loved the way his thick fingers wrapped around my dark strands, gently twisting between and around them. It made me think of him rubbing at my skin, making me orgasm without taking my panties off. I nodded against him, so content and warm. I felt tired all of a sudden, and I realized that I could actually sleep if I wanted to. That was a first for me, to be so relaxed during the day that I could fall asleep. I suspected it had everything to do with the company. Kale was humming a song, telling me about this little band he found in a bar in Kentucky after he graduated basic training, and how he heard their song on the radio. I loved when he was tired and his voice was even deeper than it always was.
I'm so relaxed. You would think that I came too,
he said. I leaned up, lifting my face to where he could see it. Do you want to? I kissed his chin. He smiled.
Is that a rhetorical question?
I shook my head. I started to kiss down his chin, around his collarbone and shoulders. His skin was so soft under my lips. I kissed the scar across his shoulder twice. He started to talk to me, to encourage me, tell me how hard I made him, when his phone started to ring on the nightstand. He grabbed it, eyes reading the screen.
It's Mendoza,
he said, showing me the phone. I nodded, telling him to answer.
Hey, you.
Kale started to speak, but he was cut off by shouting.
Hey, man, slow down. Everything's okay.
Kale's voice was different again. Back to Sergeant Martin he was. It astounded and impressed me. He had such great empathy. His soul glowed from the inside. I thought maybe our empathy would one day be our destruction, because it seemed neither of us could control it. But for now, we were both alive, and he was showing me what a thoughtful man looked like. Beautiful brown skin, sympathetic eyes, and a considerate heart. That's exactly what it looked like.
No. We're okay, bud. Let's talk about where you are, and I'll come meet you. We'll grab a beer, shoot some darts, whatever.
Kale was out of my bed, sliding his pants up his legs before his friend responded. I didn't know what to do, so I just sat there on the bed as Kale moved around me, in full-on mission mode. His eyes touched me every few seconds to remind me that he knew I was still there. But he was so focused on Mendoza on the other line that it was impressive and chilling.
Just me. I won't tell Gloria where you are. I don't want Karina to know either.
Kale looked at me. I don't mean what I'm saying, his eyes told me. I knew that. Kale's shoes were on and he told Mendoza he was on his way.
Look. Go back inside and order us some beers. Hell, I'll drink tequila with you. But don't leave. Wait there for me.
Was he going to hurt himself? I got out of the bed and moved toward Kale. He held his finger up to tell me to keep quiet.
I'll be there soon. Everything's fine. Don't talk to anyone else until I get there,
Kale instructed. Is everything okay? I asked him. He nodded.
Mendoza. He's drunk and started saying these guys were spying on him. It's paranoia from having to watch your back all the time, from seeing your buddies get blown up. I get it,
he said. His words rattled me.
I'm sorry I have to go again.
He kissed my forehead, then my cheeks, then my mouth.
I'll be back as soon as I'm done there.
Don't drink tequila and drive, I told him. Actually, let me drive you. He shook his head.
I'm sorry, Care. But if he sees you after I told him you weren't coming, he won't trust me. I'm not going to drink tequila there, and neither is he. I'm going to convince him to go to Steak and Shake with me. Milkshakes only,
he told me. I have to go to my dad's, but I'll have my phone on me. I really don't want to. I'm so tired, I told him, leaning against his chest for one more touch before he left.
Don't go then? It's just one night. You've been working your ass off lately and wasting all your free time entertaining me.
He hugged me.
You hate going there anyway. Why not just take a week off?
I couldn't see Kale's face, but his voice was convincing enough. He was right. Why was I so willing to put myself through the inconvenience of going to these scheduled dinners every week, just so I wouldn't upset my dad and his Stepford wife? At least when Rory and Lorelai are forced to go to Rory's grandma's house, they miss when something comes up. I could do that. I was an adult. I could miss it.
I,
Kale started to say when he pulled away. I pretended not to hear it. I didn't want anything to ruin our happy little bubble. And if he started saying he loved me when we had only known each other a week, I would never forgive him. Be safe and text me when you get there to let me know everything's okay, please? I asked of him. He nodded, kissed me again, and walked to the bedroom door.
What are you going to do about tonight?
Kale asked. I made up my mind. Tonight, I'm going to nap until you're back. A smile spread across his face, but it didn't quite reach his eyes. He's okay, right? I asked him. He nodded.
Yeah, Care. He's going to be okay.
He reassured me. I fell into bed thinking about how many soldiers across the globe had demons chasing them long after they had left the battlefield. Home wasn't such a safe place for them. I drifted off to sleep, wondering how strong the demons chasing my soldier were. Kale was asleep in my bed when I got home from the store. I texted my dad, only saying sorry I can't make it, and took a 3-hour nap. And then went to the grocery store. I called him back while I walked through the freezer aisle and told him that I didn't feel like coming. That was it. He didn't like my answer, but let me get off the phone when Austin called his other line. Elodie was at another FRG gig, a cookout this time. She seemed happy to be out socializing, especially since she found a couple of wives who were actually nice to her. They were new at the post and didn't want anything to do with the catty assholes who thought it was fun to target Elodie. Being outsiders themselves, they could see the situation for what it was. A pack of mean girls who hadn't quite grown up, who somehow thought it was okay to let jealousy guide every action. Elodie's new friends just wanted to drink wine and watch Netflix. So minus the wine, it was perfect for Elodie. Kale was shirtless, wearing boxer briefs that accentuated his muscly thighs. I thought back to the first day I saw him in the lobby, when he refused to take off his sweats or let me touch his right leg. It wasn't that long ago that the stranger with the strange name was lying on my massage table. And here he was, lying on my bed, his arm dangling over the side. I lifted his hand and held it in mine, brought it to my lips and kissed him gently. He didn't stir. Holding his hand like this, touching each of his fingers, tracing the little creases around his knuckles, just his hand in mine was the best remedy. I loved his hands, how big they were, how strong. I thought of how they held me, touched me, brought me to the brink and beyond. I gently dropped his arm, slid my shoes and pants off, and climbed into bed with him. He woke up as soon as I wrapped my body around his, clinging to him like he was life support. Life support. That's what he was starting to feel like for me. I should have been worried about that, but I wasn't. I'd never been the needy type, never played the damsel in distress. It's just not my style, and yet, there he was. This night sprawled out and cozy in my bed. I should have remembered that not all fairy tales end in happily ever after. When Kale's eyes opened, confusion filled them for a few seconds. I saw the moment he came back to reality. Hey. He curled his body into mine. We were trying to crawl inside of each other. Anything less, well, nothing would feel close enough unless that was possible.
How was the store? Do you need help carrying bags in?
He asked. It was good, He cut me off before I could finish.
Why are you still dressed?
He whined, though I was pantless. Having this man want me gave me a high I never could have dreamed of. I'd never felt like this before, not once. I knew what a cliche it was, and I didn't care. All I cared about was right in front of me, moving closer. Kale lifted himself up on his elbow, leaning over me, positioning himself to gaze down at me. The angles of his face continued to surprise me, as if each time he looked at me from a different viewpoint, I saw a new side of him. The way he took me in. He swallowed hard, wanting to devour me. It was a small movement, almost imperceptible, and yet an act so intense I had to close my eyes to keep from falling. I could feel the heat of his face moving closer to mine, his lips moving closer to mine. His fingers were warm when he inched my shirt up above my belly button, up my torso, until I shimmied enough for him to pull it over my head. I felt cool air on my skin, but the goosebumps, the electricity coursing through my body came from Kale.
I missed your mouth.
He spoke slowly, each word betraying his want, each breath revealing his need. He touched his fingertips to my lips, tracing them. I licked them, running my tongue under his soft skin, over his hard nails. I nipped him playfully, and he reacted first by licking his lips, then biting them. He was trying to slow himself down. I could hear it in his breath, see it in his face. He wanted me. Kale, I said, taking big gulps of air. This moment, now.
The words. Your words.
Kale's voice was raspy, his dark eyes smoky.
The way they taste.
He bent down to kiss them.
They taste even better than they sound.
He pulled away and then dipped down to kiss me again. It was more than a kiss. It was a touch and a kiss, and something that I couldn't begin to explain, and it pulsed through my body as pure arousal. He slid his tongue between my lips, separating them to have more of me. My body came alive. I was closest to the purest human form when under his spell. When he was touching me, I could feel my mind opening up. Vast spaces were cleared. Every move he made pushed aside the chaos inside my head, put me at ease.
Every part of you.
He kissed my jawline, making my eyes close.
Tastes so good.
He was so hard, I could feel him pressing against me, my body reacting to him before my mind could. I reached between us to touch him, but he grabbed my wrist, pinning it above my head.
In a hurry?
Kale dipped his head down again, this time sucking at the flesh spilling over my bra. I shuddered.
I've been thinking about your tits all day, how they would feel in my hands.
He reached up and covered my entire breast with his large hand. My eyes rolled back in my head, and I swear I could feel myself moving in and out of consciousness. He sucked at me until I felt the sweet sting of the blood breaking over my skin. He was marking me, branding me, making me his. I ached between my thighs.
How they taste?
He bit me gently, dipping his tongue between the lacy cup of my bra. I missed you, I managed to say through the moans slipping from my lips. He was sucking at my nipple now, biting gently. The pain mixed with pleasure sent a tantalizing surge through my entire body.
Oh, I missed you so much.
I gasped. I was no longer capable of breathing.
What, Karina? What do you want?
He asked. He was teasing me, taunting me. I swallowed sand, my mouth was so dry. All of the wetness had moved elsewhere on my body. Never in my life had I known why people liked sex so much, why sex made them do crazy things. Yet if Kale asked me to rob a bank with him right at that moment, while he gently sucked and pulled at my nipple, I would have happily said yes. Not being with him, not feeling his hands on mine, his mouth on mine, that would be the real crime. More, Kale, I need more. I had barely gotten the last word out before his hand pushed under my body and he lifted me, carefully flipping our bodies so that I was on top of him. I could feel the pool of arousal soaking through my panties as he throbbed against me, pressing against my pulsing sex. I wanted to tell him to fuck me. I didn't care if it hurt. I wanted him to plow into me, to take me until there was nothing left to take. I wanted to slide my panties off and lower my body onto his. Like he was reading my mind, his fingers went from digging into my hips slipping inside my panties. I moaned, my head dropping in relief, then thrown back in arousal. I was throbbing from him at the core of my body. Kale's thick finger teased me, tracing up and down, all over the sticky wetness, but not where I needed him the most. He knew just where to touch. I could tell by the way he handled my body, the confident way he talked me through it. I moved my hips, sliding myself up so his fingers slid against my clit. I groaned, and suddenly two fingers were inside my panties, spreading me open. I felt a small pinch, and then a wave of extreme pleasure.
I want to lick you, suck on you, taste you, tease you.
Each word was breathed rather than spoken. His eyes were blazing now. Another pinch. Fuck. I moved my hips again, rubbing his cock against my aching core. It was the switchboard for my body, and Kale was testing all the circuits. He took his fingers from my flesh and brought them to his mouth, tasting me. I looked down at him, feeling like a goddess feeding a starving man. He sucked at his finger, eyes closing.
Come here,
he said, his hands gripping my waist. He lifted me up, bringing me to his mouth.
Are you?
I started to ask questions, but his tongue gave the answer as it licked circles on my body. I wanted to pull away, to tell him, to apologize for not shaving all the way. All of my insecurities bubbled to the surface, battling with the pain of pleasure building inside of my body. I don't know how it was possible, but for once, the pleasure won the war inside my head, and I thought only of Kale's hands on the top of my thighs, just below my waist. The way he held me in place over his tongue, when my body started to shake above him, and inaudible words fell from my lips, he used his finger to help his magical tongue, and I came so hard that I collapsed on his warm, solid body. He held me, his arms wrapped tightly around my back, pressing my body to his. While my body danced and glowed in post-orgasm bliss, I wondered if other boys knew the female body the way Kale did, and it made me start thinking about the girls Kale had touched before, kissed, and made moan his name as they came.
You're so beautiful when you come,
he said into my ear, tracing his fingers down my back. I wanted to punish myself, remind myself that this is almost likely too good to be true, but the way he lifted my face with both his hands on my cheeks and kissed me made me forget about all the doubts swirling inside of me. He had that power. It both terrified and electrified me. Chapter 58. My shift the next morning was so long that I could barely keep my eyes open. It was toward the end of Stuart's treatment, and she was telling me about her upcoming move to Hawaii. It was a big deal for her. The promotion she'd been angling for had finally come through. Stuart was talking a mile a minute about her partner, about how optimistic she was about moving her small business to Hawaii. She designed these cute floral dresses and sold them online and in a few local boutiques, so her business was portable. Actually, she'd most likely do better in a beach town than here near the border of Georgia and Alabama, almost 5 hours away from the coast. I was a little distracted while Stuart was talking. Every time I moved, I felt Kale coursing through my body. 12 hours after that explosive moment, and I could still remember every moment and every touch. I had barely landed back on Earth.
She's going to set up one of those little shops right on the beach. She's convinced she's made for beach life.
Stuart winced as I applied my harshest pressure. She was always full of knots, but she could handle the pain better than most. I laughed a little while she continued talking. Her head was in the cradle and her voice was muffled a bit, but that's something you get used to.
I reminded her that we're going to be living by the post since we can't live on post, she said.
The military needed to catch up with the times. It blew my mind that she could serve her country the same way as a straight woman, but she couldn't tap into the same benefits for her family that a straight soldier could. Seemed like don't ask, don't tell was replaced by don't care, won't pay.
Kale once told me that he knew a gay woman who was on her deathbed in Germany from war-related injuries, and the army never called her partner. Just her homophobic parents who left her to die alone. They hid behind regulation to get away with their horrendous negligence.
I heard the on-post housing is really nice, but we did find a cute little house only a few miles from post. It has a small garden for the dogs. Speaking of dogs, it's next to impossible to bring them to Hawaii with us. People are telling me that their animals were quarantined for months before they would release them. That's a headache we're still trying to navigate.
I listened to Stuart talk for the rest of our session, but underneath every word there was Kale, his calloused hands grazing my thighs,
his mouth between them, spreading me open. Being exposed like that didn't frighten me. The way he touched me, the way he looked at me, it was as if he found something inside of me, made it blossom. I begged for his mouth to suck at my skin, pleaded for him to hook his fingers inside of me. My tummy ached, my body missed his. After last night, I didn't feel so afraid of what was going to happen next with us. We didn't have a plan, but we didn't need one. We had time to go at our own pace and tailor this relationship to exactly what we wanted it to be. Right now, that meant spending each and every waking moment questioning the world together. I found myself counting down to the end of Stuart's treatment so that I could at least check my phone. I wanted to connect with him in any way I could. I needed to feel closer to him, even just to see his name on my phone screen, to reread the texts he had sent this morning. I wanted to see the picture I took of us lying in my bed with his arm draped lazily across my lap. His eyes were closed, a big smile on his face. 3 more minutes. That seemed excruciatingly long. I didn't think Stuart would even notice, since I was already just doing a sort of cool down on her, gently moving my hands over her skin to relax her after the deep tissue massage. I waited it out for 1 more minute and ended her session with 2 minutes to go. I felt a little guilty, but a little rushed, too. I grabbed my phone from the shelf the moment my hands left her body. No new messages, but I did have a missed call from my dad. Well, that could wait. I didn't feel like talking to him. The only thing on my mind was how Kale's mouth tasted like his cherry chapstick, and how hard he laughed when I tripped over a piece of tile in my bathroom. We had moved from my bedroom to my bathroom, still not able to let go, to stop touching, stop exploring one another. Karina? Stuart's voice made me jump. My phone dropped to the floor, the picture of Kale and me open on the screen. Oh my God, sorry. I hid my face under my hair as I bent down to grab it. I'll let you get dressed. See you in the lobby, I told her, leaving her in privacy. When I stepped into the hallway, I had to bite my lips to stop myself from laughing. Typically, I would fret over something like that, even something as small as that. Was Stuart uncomfortable or thinking that I lost my mind? This time, my brain didn't go there the way it normally did, until I forced it to. It naturally thought about how obsessed I was becoming with Kale, and how big his smile would be when I told him about my phone mishap in front of Stuart. What I felt for Kale was something between sweet infatuation and total annihilation. It was powerful and raw. He was fierce as an animal and yet so kind and gentle. He was a bundle of contradictions. Every conflict there was. He had an animalistic nature. It was more secure and calm than the chaos of being on the verge of commitment. I was terrified because no matter how thrilling it was to immerse myself in Kale and the stillness he brought to my life, until last night my fears had made me fight against everything, even my own desire. As he slept on my chest, and again when he woke up in the middle of the night asking for someone named Nielsen, then shouting Philip's name, I made a promise to myself, and to Kale, that I would confront my fears, that I would stop letting the terrible unknown control everything. I deserved to let go and live, really live. And he deserved the version of me who didn't need to know where everything would fit. And I was living, now that my doubts and insecurities had been lifted just enough to feel the buzz inside me turn from panic to excitement. Was this what happiness was like? Chapter 59. It's so good to see you like this, Stuart told me, squeezing my hand as I handed her a pen and her receipt. I smiled, shaking my head. What? I've always been like this. We both laughed, and I felt that I was sharing something with her. Yes, this must be what happiness was like. See you next week, she said. I was pleased for Stuart and the change ahead, but I was going to miss her so much. I cleaned up my room as fast as I could while still being thorough. I threw towels in the laundry and checked the bathroom to make sure it was clean and that the scented wax burner inside didn't need another cube. I didn't wait for Aility to finish her client. Just shouted a general bye in Molly's direction and left. Every day that passed, I loved my house more and was thankful I only had to walk 5 minutes. I texted Kale to make sure he was still at my house. On my way. I missed you. Hope you're still in bed. Smiley face. I stared at the phone as I walked outside, turning into the alley. It was cool, the clouds blocking the sun. I thought, feeling only slightly ridiculous, that when I saw Kale, even the sky would shine brighter. A few more minutes. The texting bubble popped up. 3 little gray dots were there. Then they weren't. I looked up from my phone and down the alley. I could see Kale's Bronco parked on the street right in front of my house. Curb appeal of a different sort, I thought. But when I got to the end of the street and went to cross, my eyes landed on a black Buick parked in my driveway. I hadn't noticed it until now. I didn't need to see the U.S. Army sticker on the bumper to know it was my dad's. I felt as if someone had poured a bucket of cold water over me. I was nervous now, unsettled. I almost wanted to turn back around and hide behind the line of dumpsters in the alley while I text Kale and tell him to get rid of my dad. Honestly, I would have and should have, but my dad's voice boomed through the yard and across the street to me. The screen door was open, and as I walked faster, I could see the shape of my dad, his back turned to me. He was standing just inside my little house, and his hands were raised like he was yelling. Kale's voice was next.
"You don't have a fucking clue,"
he shouted. Chills ran from the tips of my fingers to the tips of my toes, and something in my brain, some minuscule detail of a buried memory, told me to stop there, right before I reached the porch. I stayed in the cover of the alley while they were going at it, and they were going at it hard, each word a blow. Afghanistan, cover up, how dare you come here? Criminal, my family, my daughter, my daughter. I hugged the wall and crouched down small, a vain attempt to protect myself from what I was hearing. But of course, I didn't know what I was hearing. I couldn't make sense of it other than to understand that my dream of happily ever after had just ended, and a nightmare had begun. Chapter 60.
"Don't think I didn't recognize you the moment you walked into my house,"
my dad said. He was angry. The last time I saw him this mad was when he saw divorce lawyers in my mom's search history on the family computer. Yeah, my dad was the kind of guy who checked up on his wife's search history.
"Why didn't you say something then, if you were so worried about my intentions with your daughter?"
Kale's words stuck to me. What was this? What was happening? I felt like I was in a funhouse, mirrors cut in weird shapes, bent to confuse you with a distorted vision of reality. What you thought was reality. Everything around me was warped. I could barely feel my feet on the grass.
"I wasn't sure at first. Then I asked Mendoza if it was you. You've grown up a lot since then." "Because I was a child, a few months out of high school. You're still a child, going around asking questions, sticking your nose where it doesn't belong." "They came to me. I got pulled in for questioning because he tried to blow his fucking head off, okay?"
Kale was trying to tame himself. I could tell by the way his breath pushed through his words.
"That was unfortunate, I'll grant you. But this can't get out."
My dad's voice was lower to the ground now. He was menacing. More than a little scared, too.
"We'll all be fucked. Do not realize that, boy. Don't call me boy. I'm not your fucking boy."
I stood up, not caring now if they saw me. I knew I needed to go inside for my dad's sake. I couldn't let this escalate, but I knew that I couldn't trust either of them to tell me the whole truth when I got there. I hated that.
"We'll all be fucked. I'm retiring. You're so close to that medical discharge you want,"
he told Kale.
"Mendoza, he's getting the help he needs and can stay enlisted. We can't have people snooping around." "Snooping around? Innocent people died and you fucking knew and hid it,"
Kale shouted at my father as I opened the door. When he saw me, his anger turned to panic. With a slower reflex, my dad turned around to see what had Kale's attention.
"Karina, I told you about him."
My dad pointed from Kale to me. He was always quick at trying to slap a band-aid on a problem.
"I told you he was trouble and you didn't take me seriously."
"What the hell is going on?" My heart was pounding. Kale looked different, like a stranger again. It made my blood run cold.
"Tell me what you're talking about,"
I yelled. And when neither of them spoke, I screamed.
"Now!"
Kale reached for me, but I jerked away.
"I can tell you what's going on. Your dad's a crooked son of a bitch and has—
Bullshit!"
my dad tried to interrupt.
"Let him speak,"
I snapped at my dad. My hands were shaking. My whole body was shaking.
"It's him, Karina. He's a senile narcissist who has convinced himself of some plot that I'm with you because of him. It's not true. He's the cause of all of this."
Kale's veil of composure was slipping. I wanted to comfort him. I wanted to run away. I stood there between them as their truths swirled around me, trying to stick.
"Mendoza, the MP who fucking came at us, he's behind all of it."
My dad balled his hands into fists.
"Speaking of military careers, Did he tell you he's on the verge of getting himself a dishonorable discharge?
I could feel my face changing colors. The blood was rising to the surface as my chest throbbed under my worktop. I tried to read Kale, but I couldn't. I couldn't pull back the screen to see the Kale I was falling for.
At this point, you don't even care, do you, Martin? You have your bags all packed to move up to Atlanta. Word travels fast. You bought a house there, right? Another project for you to destroy?
My dad's golf shirt was pulling, untucking from his jeans, and his skin was red, all blotchy. Like a liar, or an innocent man on trial, I couldn't tell.
You bought a place in Atlanta?
I turned to Kale, a lump in my throat. He was speechless. I wasn't having it.
Did you?
I pushed hard at his chest, but he didn't move. He was in his uniform. The green and tan had always been an omen to the bad shit in my life. Looks like that hasn't changed. I pushed him again, and he latched onto my wrists.
It's not like that. He's twisting everything, Karina. He is. This is me.
He tapped his fingers against his chest.
He's falsified a report. Don't let him fool you. He signed that paper knowing damn well what happened. Are you denying it, Martin?
My dad was goading him. I knew the tone. I had despised it ever since I had learned to decipher it.
Are you denying that you came into my office, shivering, your leg all bandaged, and signed your name on the bottom of that page? You signed it. Mendoza signed it. Lawson signed it. All of you. And now you decide almost 2 years later to come back and dig up old bones?
My dad was in full-on officer mode. I listened obediently. So did Kale. It was sickening to watch the way my dad knew just how to warp the tone of his voice to whip soldiers into submission. Anyone, really.
His friend died, Care.
Don't call me that, I managed. My stomach turned. My dad's ashy skin fell in loose folds around his jaw. That, combined with his shock of white hair, made him look like a villain. Kale looked wounded and hurt, more hero than anti-hero. But looks can be deceiving, I knew that. I wanted both of them to disappear. The facade of a normal life. This stability I had convinced myself that I had with Kale was shattered. Shattered into tiny little shards too dangerous even to attempt to pick up.
His friend was shot in the firefight when Mendoza murdered those innocents. Do you know how much investigating goes into those types of claims? You are children.
Now he was talking to both of us.
I was helping them. I saw their faces when they returned. You.
He pointed an accusing finger at Kale.
I watched you pull his body into camp, barely able to walk yourself. You were protecting your own ass.
Kale snarled at my dad.
You didn't give a fuck about us or our lives.
My dad was talking over him. My head was spinning.
Tell your daughter how you use the lives of young men and women to get promotions and medals. Tell her that because of your damn near threatening us, my fucking friend is losing his mind over the guilt, and he can't even talk to anyone about it because he...
Kale stepped toward my dad. I gave up trying to stand between them.
Tell her that Mendoza begged you to let him turn himself in. Those victims haunt him, and you're keeping him from healing so your retirement won't be at stake. Those victims haunt him. Are you hearing yourself, Martin? You're a soldier. I'm a soldier. We've seen and done things most people can't dream of.
My dad was talking to Kale in his own language. I could hear the words, but unlike them, I couldn't call up images of death and destruction like they could.
You know what will haunt him? If he can't feed his family, and his wife is left alone with those kids and no paycheck. That's haunting. You need to man up. You and him. This isn't some fucking video game. This is grown man shit, and if you can't handle it, you're a waste of a soldier. Either you want to protect your friend and his family, or you want him to heal. You don't get both in the real world.
My dad always invoked the real world when he wanted to make a point. The point being that he was a grown-up and everyone else, me or Austin, or in this case Kale, were not.
Going about this by sleeping with my daughter isn't the way to resolve this, unless you want to get yourself in more trouble.
My dad was threatening Kale openly. Then he turned to me.
He's trying to strip my rank before my retirement, and I won't allow it. I'm sorry, honey.
My dad was working hard to compose himself, shifting now to the dad costume he's so quick to throw on and off. It was eerie how he could change his voice, his stature, to match the role he was playing. At the moment, it was concerned parent.
This goes way beyond you and whatever feelings you have. He's putting people in danger, including himself by trying to shine a light on a closed case that not one of us needs to open up. This will bring attention to you, too. Did you think of that?
I couldn't tell if he was talking to me or Kale.
All I did was ask Lawson if it was you.
Kale turned to me.
I didn't know, Karina. I would never lie about that. I didn't tell you the rest because he knew it was better for everyone.
My dad interrupted. I stared at Kale while he tried to explain himself. I tried to find my footing, my center of gravity. I needed to process everything, but it was beyond me. I looked at Kale. I searched his eyes, but I couldn't find what I was looking for. He was blank, shutting down, taking my silence as doubt.
I didn't even recognize your dad at first, I swear.
Kale reached for my hands. The oven timer went off randomly, and I thought it was pretty ironic the way it was beeping and beeping, almost as if my house was trying to help me escape the chaos. My dad started in on me next.
He was using you to get back at me, Karina, trying to take you away from me. I had your picture on my desk, everyone saw it. Think about it, how distant you've been lately, the missed dinner, not returning my calls. He put that in your head, didn't he?
I thought about it. I thought about it hard. I thought about how easy it was for my dad to twist the truth. He was so good at it, he should have been a politician. And yet, Kale had told me that my dad was complicated, but I had shrugged it off. And he had told me that I should give myself a break by not going over to my dad's for dinner. I had shrugged that off, too. And what about Kale and the discharge, and the house in Atlanta? What about the sudden change in his behavior? How he went from being flaky and unpredictable to constantly at my side? What about the way he told me I could trust him? He peppered my face with gentle kisses after he'd had his way with me. I could throw up just thinking about it.
Karina, you're my daughter. I have no reason to lie to you.
At that, I laughed. That in itself is a lie.
You barely know him. Think about it.
My dad was talking to me like I was a child, like he was on the verge of telling me that I was overreacting. Kids your age are so emotional.
How easily you're influenced scares me, and he's irresponsible, Karina. Risking his career to ask questions about something that's over, done with. I wasn't asking questions of anyone except Lawson,
Kale said at the same time that I said. How easily I'm influenced?
You brought Mendoza to mental health, did you not? I have eyes and ears all over this post. Did you forget that?
My dad had given up being the concerned parent. He was pure wolf now.
He was in his front yard waving a gun around in the air. He told me he didn't deserve to live.
The words tore through Kale. I could feel it. I felt everything he felt on top of my own emotions. My back was close to breaking from the weight of it all.
He told me he was a monster.